Okay, well, for the first few minutes while waiting for everybody to join, I just want to mention my new course that's come up. That's the Ultimate Healing at Home part, where I put all the information for this course and create meditations out of it so people can work with the material at home. Because for many years people are asking, can I do this at home when they can't make the course? So I finally put together a way. So that's launching this weekend, the Ultimate Healing course part one, which is at the at-home part. This is also a prerequisite for the in-person course in future as well. That way people have got the material beforehand, they're ready to go much deeper when they actually arrive on the in-person course and get straight down to work. So the course has 8 modules, so you'll be taken through all the information, new exercise and meditations to do, the kind of guide meditations MP3. We'll be taken through all various healing processes. And so we can ask more about that if you like. So let's begin what we're doing today. So today I was going to talk about crisis. Seems to be a good time for it, plenty of that in the world. So I'm going to start by talking about what crisis is really here for. It's something that's always been in life, and it's one of the places we wake up. Well, truthfully, it's not how we should wake up, but it's one way. So there's 4 places we generally wake up, we call the hallows, which are love, beauty, enchantment, and solitude. But each of these things has a negative if you're not taking it properly. And actually, crisis goes with enchantment, because both are the cracks in your routine in which the soul can speak to you. See, quite often in our routine, we get so stuck in what we're doing, we're not listening to the soul. We're missing the big picture. We get caught in this materialistic life, and yet your soul is starving. Your soul wants to be fed. It seeks things like beauty and so on, but actually the place it talks to you is through enchantment or crisis, because both are breaks in the routine. If you're allowing the enchanted moments, you never have crisis, because you don't need it. See, what happens in an enchanted moment, as an example, maybe like a beautiful butterfly resting your shoulder and suddenly you don't want to move. You're caught in that moment and the beauty of it, and it's like you're not held, but you still don't want to move. That's enchantment. In these moments, time is suspended. The routine is broken. You're open to listen to the soul. This is what enchantment does. Crisis does very much the same thing. There's a break in your routine. Suddenly, nothing works. Everything you used to is not working. It's broken. In that crisis, in that chaos, it's like you have to listen to the soul. There's a crack in the routine where things are not working. It's quite often those the messages come. The same message you have in enchantment can come through crisis. If you're not listening to the enchanted moments, crisis comes. So what to do about it? Well, first of all, you have to be aware of how to welcome the enchanted moments, but it's also about stopping and listening. If everything's not working, why would you keep trying? Quite often we get caught banging our head against the wall, doing things that don't work anymore. This is madness. I actually remember Einstein's definition of madness was trying to do the same thing all the time and expect different results. So you realize that if things are not working, stop. It's no point in trying to make something work when it obviously doesn't work. Usually what happens in a crisis, the things that used to work are not working now. Why? Because things are changing. None of these techniques are absolute. We give you techniques to actually work with consciousness, but they can't really hold the higher truths. Those are very simple. The fact that we create your reality, or you co-create your reality, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. But there's so much to learn around this, that often the techniques develop suiting us where we are now. As we change, suddenly those techniques are not good enough. They're not getting us what we need. And suddenly the soul is closing down and says, no, this is no longer working. You throw into chaos until you listen. So first thing, when things are not working, stop. Don't try anymore. Stop there and listen to what the soul is telling you. Simple example in this, all these shutdowns things, all everybody's locked down at home and not being able to do anything. Perfect time for transformation. I got locked down here as well. Oh, it's a beautiful place. You know, I tend to take a lot of time in meditation last few months in the real spiritual retreat. Great transformation. And the thing is, to understand crisis, it's good to understand the other places we wake up. The enchantment, the solitude, the love, the beauty. See, solitude is also very important. It's not the same as loneliness. Loneliness is what you get when you don't actually allow the solitude. It's like the negative coming in again. Because quite often when you're alone, in that loneliness, you often get thrown into shadow. What solitude really is an intimacy with self. Again, you've got the space of being with yourself, listening, in meditation, finding your soul. That can happen through loneliness as well, but in a more painful way. In loneliness, you go into shadow. You go right into depth of your despair, into your shadow where you have to grow. Obviously, we need to embrace shadow as well along the way, but it's better if we can do it in a controlled way rather than being forced into it. So we create spaces of solitude. Love. Seems very obvious these days, everybody talks about it, but how does it really work? It brings you close. Whatever you have love with, you're getting close, you're getting to know. Its downside is pain, because pain also brings you close, which is why people bond through pain. Quite often in negative relationships, when they're dysfunctional, it's because people are bonding through pain. If you don't know how to bond through love, the pain is what brings you close. You know each other through it. This is why you get abused children and abusive relationships and so on. People are trying to get close. With beauty, the downside is violence. Because what beauty is trying to do is give you a sense of your eternity. When someone's being violent, they're actually trying to play God. Again, trying to get a sense of eternity. So you see, in these moments of solitude, in this place where you're alone, that's the time to actually listen to the soul. You find the solitude. You try and find the enchanted moments in that place of being alone. You try and find the beauty. Now, what beauty really is that combination of exhilaration with serenity, joy with peace. What we consider to be beautiful are things which give us that feeling. Beauty itself is the basic energy of creation. It shows you eternity. It's when you're in touch with that exhilaration with serenity, you're in touch with the real power, with the source. And this is what we seek in this, well, in this meditation time, in your solitude. At this point, you don't worry about where it's going to go, because you're going to into a position where you can change your reality. One reason why there is such a huge crisis in the world is because nothing is fixed anymore. We are creating it ourselves now. It is all up to you. Your life will be your creation. Nobody can tell you where it's going to go. You have to create it now. This is part of the waking up process. And there's a big call to wake up in this world, but actually you can't help it. People are creating the reality whether they like it or not. So part of the crisis is realizing, you know, okay, the world is uncertain simply because you haven't been creating it. Waiting for somebody else to tell you what's going to happen. Waiting for somebody else to provide the security. Still putting our authority outside ourselves. Waiting for the leader to be in control. Make everything okay. Well, you've seen the fallacy of that over many generations of really bad governments. Can't trust any of them. People are still hoping for a better government. But actually, they're still giving power away. No, create it yourself. In this time where you don't know what's happening, with this uncertainty, great. Listen to your soul. In that solitude, you begin to have your vision, and you decide what you're going to create. You come back to the position of power, where you realize you've been given power away. You can't rely on governors, and can't believe in media or anything like that. So much confused message out there, and you don't know what to believe. Well, actually, don't believe any of it. Just create your own reality. So it's in this time of solitude that one should really be finding this time to remember who you are. Let all these things that don't work fall away in the crisis. What's falling away is trusting governments, trusting in medicine, trusting in media. Hopefully many of you don't trust in those things anyway, but certainly who does is finding the expectations shattered. You can't believe in any of those things anymore. It's all proved false and corrupt. And you realize your health is in your own hands. People waiting for an answer to the disease, that's pretty imaginary. And actually, it's not difficult to cure. I've said this all along. All of us natural therapists, homeopaths, and so on, have had no trouble with the COVID. Treat it like anything else, and it's clear that anything else always has. So this whole scam is something people stop believing in. So in this whole time of crisis, you let everything fall away. You don't have to believe in anything. You simply take time to listen to your soul. Spend time in solitude with yourself. To actually let go of all the things you've trusted that you don't trust anymore. Let it all go. And then as you begin to listen to your soul and remember who you are, you listen to that message that people have been saying for centuries. You create your own reality. And you begin to think about how you're going to do that. think of your dreams, the world you want to create. You stop putting energy into creating that. So partly meditation is to be open, to heal, to let go. Partly it's to start creating your future. How is this world going to change? You decide. You know, we don't all live in the same reality. Some people already live in their private Armageddon. Other people already live in the miracle. Where you're going to be does not depend on the rest of the world. And many different creations going on. Just decide your reality, your future. You can bring other people with you, you want your friends there as well and so on. You picture all that too, you visualize it all. And you begin to put energy into creating your future. Not giving power away to somebody else who you think is going to do it for you. Governments are not going to do it for you. The media isn't going to do it for you. The pharmaceutical industry certainly isn't going to do it for you. They are all after their own needs, not yours. So basically, that's how you handle crisis. Take advantage of the solitude. Let go of everything that's been shattered. Let go of trusting anything outside yourself. And begin to listen to your soul. And begin to remember that you create your own reality. Remember that you are God. This is all your creation. Any questions about anything? Where are we? Okay. Somebody's asking about how to dissolve your addiction to saying yes to others, no to yourself. Basically, what we've got here is quite a common problem amongst many healers and New Age people who are trying to be nice. What we call the law of servitude. Now, laws go much deeper than beliefs. See, beliefs tend to form in the subconscious. Push it deep into the unconscious, it becomes a law. You're no longer aware of it, but when you try and break it, you punish yourself. See, beliefs you break, you try and break a law, you punish yourself, it puts straight back in place again. Laws tend to form early in your childhood to make sense of the chaos. So supposing as a child, you know, then you found other people getting stuff and you just had to do work and look after everybody. Because it's painful, you simply make a law that makes the chaos normal so you can get on with life. Law says, oh, I'm here to serve. Then suddenly you can get on with life. It's no longer painful because you accepted it. You don't expect anything for yourself. You just look after everybody else. This is how it forms a law of servitude. What happens later is become a law. Every time somebody has a need, you're looking after them. You forget about your own needs because the law says you're here to serve others. So the law has to be broken. There are methods for this in various of my courses. We can do it in the healing as well. But basically, you have to go deep into the unconscious to actually break that law. First step is to understand what it is. There's a law operating here. It's becoming assertive isn't always that easy, is it? A lot of people don't even know what it means. It's not about being aggressive and being pushy. Assertiveness comes with that open throat chakra where you're expressing yourself freely. You know who you are. Your word is valuable. Your needs matter. It's a thing. We have this balance between our needs and everybody else's needs. Sometimes other needs comes first, sometimes ours come first. That changes all the time, but we don't forget our needs. We express our needs, we express our desires, we express our beliefs. We're not forcing it on anybody. They don't have to believe us, but we express ourselves. Assertiveness is also being able to say where your boundary is. They can do what they like, but not in my space. In my space, I won't tolerate this. I draw a line. That's your boundary. It comes with self-worth, your right to look after your own needs, basically. So what holds you back is that law of servitude. Okay, somebody's asking about how to cleanse yourself after healing. There are various methods. I mean, first of all, when somebody's learning to heal, I always teach them protection as well. There's something that's missing in many forms of healing these days, because you can pick up stuff from people. Some certain rules. First of all, don't deny your own needs. It goes back to what I was talking about before. Even in the healing session, you're part of the healing process. What the person is going through might affect you because of your own stuff that's coming up. You don't push yourself aside and say that thing, you have to pay attention to them. If you release your emotions, encourage them to do the same. If they're feeling pain that triggers yours, feel it. See, quite often, it's not so much you pick the other person's stuff, you get stuck in your own because you're not willing to feel it. You think you have to put it aside for the other person. But remember the Hawaiian principle of Ho'oponopono. When you change somebody else who's got the same pattern, you change as well. Or when you change yourself, they change. So what's happening when you're working with a person, there's often things triggered. You recognize something inside yourself that's similar to what you're healing in them. You let yourself heal at the same time. You release your memories, your emotions. You're part of the process. You are one. It's not them at your expense. You are one. Now, it's this very idea of oneness that people feel that they lose their boundaries over. They want to separate so they don't pick up other people's stuff. But actually, you're not picking up their stuff. You're simply feeling the same thing because you have the same patterns. You both heal. So first, it's about attitude. However, after the session, sometimes you're going to cut off that flow. A simple way you often do is a simple gesture with the hands. You kind of cut one up, one down in front of you, especially the solar plexus. I'm cutting this off now. Then washing your hands on the cold water, it cuts off the flow. Simple things like that shut off the flow so you separate from another person. A lot of this is really to do with intention, saying, now I'm separate from this person now. Well, I'm healing, I'm one with them. Everything I'm there doing, I'm going through, I'm healing as well. Then afterwards, I'm separate again. Now I'm me, they're them. It's simply a boundary. So a simple cutting action is good. You can have cleansing visualizations as well, like I imagine a waterfall coming through you, washing all the negativity away. It only takes a minute of simple visualization at the end of a healing to make sure you're free of whatever you picked up from that person. But if you actually process it yourself, welcome all your own feelings, you won't be holding on to it. One thing is you do the same for yourself you're doing for the other person or encourage them to do. Feel everything. Welcome the feeling until it can pass and you can let it go. And then where are we? Okay, you don't need Facebook. Yes, there's something we were talking about yesterday, actually, because chances are Facebook is going to go. Just we haven't decided yet what other platform we're going to have. So we put it safe for Facebook for now, but don't worry about it. This is not important. We haven't really decided the actual platform we're going to use. There's probably going to be other social media coming out of this crisis, which isn't so corrupt. So don't worry about that. The course is going to go ahead anyway. We're going to be looking for other platforms. So don't worry about that. Okay, tachyon devices. Now, by the device, I mean anything that's been tachyonized, it's putting out tachyon energy. So anything you tachyonize is tachyon device. It's not something for making tachyon products. You see, you can tachyonize anything. Some things hold the energy better than others, of course. Like I'd rather use crystals and things than artificial things that hold the energy much better. And certain crystals hold it better. Certain metals hold it well. But tachyon device, if you tachyonize something, it holds the charge permanently. It's got tachyon there. It's putting it out all around itself. That's a tachyon device. Could be a piece of jewelry that you're wearing. Could be something larger in the house that's clearing the whole space. All different types of tachyon device. At the higher levels of tachyon, we tachyonize towers and buildings and things. Then they're big tachyon devices. They're cleansing the whole environment around them. Okay, so I'm asking about Egyptian radionics. Okay, this whole thing of radionics. What people don't get is how easy it is that actually your mind is incredibly powerful. You do create your own reality. Attached to a power source like what this provides, you can do anything. And so the ways of doing it are not totally fixed. When you douse, what you've got to remember, it's not much different from muscle testing. It's an unconscious muscle reaction. You hold a pendulum, you get a reaction message coming from you. There's no guarantee anything's perfect there. This can be coming from your own instincts, same with muscle testing. They're not totally fail-safe, but they have an effect. Now, the thing is, when you get a number, it's still your personal number. Whether you trust your dowsing or not, the number you get at that time is a measure of what you are at that time. You put out an idea, here's the number you've now created that's going to store it. There is no right and wrong. This is your number for that particular intention. You created it out of your intention. Therefore, it will work. So there is no right and wrong. Two people might douse out different numbers for the same end, and they use their own numbers and they work. There is no right and wrong in it. You don't have to be a good dowser. You just have to get your pendulum out, get your yes and no, or let's see which numbers it swings towards. If you're swinging towards a number, use that number, it works. And there are different methods. Like pumpkin, people use stick pads. There are even more electronic devices now. You touch it and it generates a number for you. How does that work? It's only a random number generator based on how long you're holding it for. Unconsciously, you know, it's the number changing so fast that the microsecond of holding it makes a difference to the number. So they say it's coming from unconscious. You touch this, come off, the number generated from your unconscious. See, it's all very unconscious here. Whatever comes up is will do. It'll work. Okay, is stream got predictive? It can be. So when you're looking at crystals, look, actually with any living thing, with its herbs or anything, people are often asking, what is it for? What are you for? We want to get to know the character of something so you can find uses for it and how we co-create with it. The Shroom Guide is high energy, very clean, therefore it doesn't store low energies. So naturally, if you're stuck in a low energy place, you have Shroom Guide on your raise your vibration, it doesn't stick. So yes, it can be protective. It's not it's for, it's just its nature, it's high energy. Any high energy crystal will do this. Herkimer diamonds, opopholite, citrines, also very good for that. They tend to not store negativity. They keep the energy higher. So yeah, it can be protective. And if you charge it, give it a purpose and intention, it'll hold that intention as well and make it stronger. Again, it's just like with the radionics, it's a lot through your own mind. You have a co-creative relationship with that crystal. It's a conscious being. You can talk to it, you can put your intention into it. It'll actually take that and amplify it. So if your intention is aligned with the nature of the crystal, great. So things like Shroom Guide, which are high vibration, you can program it, say, with a certain prayer that's high energy. Common ones people are used in these methods are like them, the Buddhist Heart Sutra, the 4 verse from Islam, the Sri Rudram from the Hindu faith. All these prayers which have very cleansing energies can work with a crystal and make it more powerful. So you can take a Shroom Guide, come through a prayer into it, and it's that much more powerful. It will protect you and keep you clean. Okay, somebody's asking the relationship between Shiva and Sekhmet. Well, they're both destroyers, that's about it. The thing is, when you look at any of these myths, each myth has the same energies in a different form, in a way. Let's take the basic trinity which every religion has, whether it's Father, Son, Holy Ghost, or Maiden, Mother, and Crone, Shiva, Vishnu, and Brahma. There's always a trinity for a reason, because in any experience, there's three sides. There's the observer, the observed, and the observation, the act of observing. They all have to be present, yet they're all one. It's the energy of God, the creator, is all those things. Therefore, the one is divided into three. That observation, the observer, or the created, the creator is like Brahma. Then there's thing being observed. That's the creation, that's Vishnu, because once it's created, it's now fixed. Therefore, protected, it holds its form. Then the act of creation, the act of observation, whatever, is very, very subtle, volatile, not fixed. That's Shiva energy. You've seen destructive because it's actually not fixed, changing, transformation. Sekhmet is seen as a destroyer too. She came when everything was corrupt, shook everything up, and made people wake up. Very much what a lot of these deities do. It's not just for destruction. This basic energy of shaking things up is not destroying physical forms, it's destroying mental constructs. Destroying laziness, egotism, all the things which are holding you back. Gives you a good shake up and so it allows transformation. So both work the same in that way. And there's more power behind that. Because that sense of destruction comes from this root of same as creation, the same volatile energy of fire, of creation. Very volatile, very powerful. So Sekhmet comes from, first of all, the Chem, which is the raw power of creation. That was sort of like a fire, which would be sexual, creative, destructive. That was called the Chem. Sekhem is like power, comes from the Chem. Sekhmet is a personification of power, she who is powerful. Shiva, again, the name breaks down. It simply means the consciousness of infinite goodness. Because obviously, in this case, you see the red energy for good, destroying the negativity, destroying evil. So the difference is quite just simply in how the different myth has shown the energy to work in our lives. Okay, somebody asked about the crystal breaks. Well, the thing is, sometimes they break for a reason. Some crystals split into two. It's going to be different from that point. You have to actually listen to it again. Not you, the same person, but again, just as I was talking about the crisis, stop and listen. Why is it broken into two? Where do these two pieces want to go? Sometimes one piece is carried on you somewhere with other pieces at home attached to some energy source that's linking to it. It can be left in some sacred place where the energy is good. It creates a link. Sometimes it's given to another person you're very close to and it keeps a link between you. Sometimes the vision is there because those two now can actually connect from a distance. Crystals are actually beyond time and space. Don't even have to measure time and space. It's a way beyond it. if a crystal is in two different places at once, it's quite normal for it. Yet it helps us to achieve that. It takes a barrier of time and space away. So it'll be different, but it can still be used. It won't be the same, but it's different, but it's still alive. Now, somebody's asking about Gresha. Trouble with Gresha, we cannot be sure that it's accurate. The method that being put out by Samuel McGregor Mathers was different from the ancient Arabic forms I've seen. What they called Goetic demons actually were called jinn in the ancient Arabic. The names, everything changed. Some like there's a system of 72 spirits, basically, and you find some different versions of this. There's 72 of them geomantic spirits, 72 of them Goetic spirits, 72 angels, 72 demons, 72 jinn, and so on in the system. There are many alternatives. And basically you have to understand that it came from sacred geometry. It was the Greeks who got into the sacred geometry, and the pattern of 72 angles, the star, 72 angles, was shown to hold all creation within it. The word angel actually came from angle, the 72 angles. And actually the demons, the Gresha, not that much different from angels. People see them as opposite now, one's good and one's evil, but that's because they've actually split up and created this dualism. What you're looking at here is simply the 72 different aspects of how the creative force works. Any system works just as well if you're actually in touch with it, if you understand that and try and feel what's behind it. Quite often the old spells don't work too well. They work to a degree, and because it's done so many times before, you fall into the same pattern. It's like when you cut a path, what people walked it easy is to walk. But then nothing new is coming in. There's no individual relationship to those beings. So in my course, I teach co-creation with the Shining Ones, the Shining One course. So this gives you an idea of what's beyond, rather than giving it any form. The Shining Ones are those forces of creation that are not yet, not quite separate, not yet intellectualized, and pre-conceptual. Learning to co-create with that is far more powerful. Okay, somebody's asking about the vision of an eagle. Quite normal, especially, and actually it is coming more into life at this time. In shamanism with animal spirits, quite normal. You join to the underworld, you find your animal spirit. They help you in your work. Of course, if you've never done shamanism before, it might be a shock to you when somebody turns up and works with you. But yeah, this is normal. There are spirits. Every spirit in nature has a particular power according to how they function. Eagles are very high up. They fly very high, they see everything. Their vision is far greater than ours. But there's more to it, which looking at them on a physical level, you don't notice. In shamanism, you recognize certain powers in the animals. The eagle is a very, very powerful spiritual guide. And the power they bring when in transformation is pretty incredible. The hunters too, they devour smaller creatures, and yet that's even transformation, because that the consciousness of that lower being is now transcended to a higher being by being one with the eagle. So again, it's a co-creator, it transforms things, takes a much higher level. But there's more coming into the world at this particular time through this crisis. The eagle energy, however it's been named, different traditions might see it different. Other people are saying, for instance, the phoenix is coming back. Eagle, phoenix, this transformative energy is coming to the world much more greater now. There's suddenly an inrush of this energy very recently into this world, helping people wake up. So if you know how to work with it, fantastic. You can transform everything much faster. You can deal with all the new problems that come in. It's part of the natural transformation that comes with the crisis. See, in a healing crisis or an evolutionary crisis, it's a natural process of evolution where things don't really evolve gradually, like Darwin was trying to say. That's totally disproven. What actually happens, something's overwhelmed. There's too much input in the environment, so you can't handle it anymore. You break down, you reorganize a higher level, which can actually handle input. This is natural. It's a mathematical problem rather than just confined to living things. This comes from Pigagine's idea. He was a mathematician. Pigagine worked with open systems. Showed you've got any open system in interactive environment, when it's overwhelmed, it kind of rearranges to a higher form, which is now handling that input. Living beings are the same. There's crisis now. Therefore, we transform. And this, both the eagle, the phoenix, as we see it, is coming in. It's this energy transformation that is with us now. Because in this crisis, it's the potential of great transformation. We can do things you never did before. So you'll find when you work with this eagle, your healing's more powerful. You're doing things you couldn't do before. Fantastic. Again, go through the crisis. Don't be stuck in old ways. And let go of old beliefs. You're going to do things you couldn't do before. Get used to that. It's fantastic. You know, See it as a positive, don't be afraid of it. Just know you're transforming, you can now handle these new problems. You can heal far better than you did before, because you're working with this energy that's come in. Seen as the eagle, because it's very high level energy. Yes, the online course does include empowerments. Not all of them, obviously, because I expect people to come to point holding later. But the earlier ones, it's got two levels of Jandali, for instance. So when you can start practicing at home, you know, you get the empowerments to raise the Kundalini. So actually the meditations you to release your emotions are working better. The Kundalini will be there, so you can go through transformation. So yeah, include some of these attunements. They'll seem more when you come to the course, because we're going on to a higher level. I'm giving the first two levels of Jandali on the pre-course, and the higher ones when we come to the in-person course. If you can't come to the in-person course, fine, you can still do those other levels online. There's always different ways. But basically, yes, the kind of at-home course includes empowerments, just includes your meditations, all the same methods for transforming yourself. Mathematician is bigger gene, I like it, Elm. Have we got... He was a mathematician who worked with open systems. Yeah, the dragon's still taking power back. It's Hum rather than Ham, H-U-M. Hum and Yogong is with your name, that actually brings back anything that's missing. Yeah. Well, obviously I'll have to, you know, if you can't travel, then that's going to be postponed, or find other ways of doing distant work as well. But I'm pretty sure things are going to change by then. World's going into a crisis. Although they're trying to delay it longer and longer and create more problems. Everything's come up to the surface, people are getting fed up and rebelling. This, you know, this corruption is going to be brought down. But again, how soon it happens, all depends on all of us. We're going to make it happen. Use this time to actually see a much better world coming out of it when this corruption is finished. Some must have been in for a long time, therefore not surprised this is happening. But I can tell you, yes, this is a pivotal year for change. It's going to change. After this, it was out, a lot of corruption will be gone. We can still have to be diligent, can't expect, you know, politicians to be uncorrupt, but a lot of the huge problems that's been there for building up for years and years and years will be brought down, so you get a chance to start anew and everything will be much better. We'll all have more money, more freedom, more ability to get on with our lives. So I'm pretty sure that it will be happening in March, but if not, yes, of course, if people can't travel, going to have to postpone it or start doing more distant work and go to the next step and see what we can do from a distance. Yes, 5G does affect your mind. Not just that. Other systems have done it for a while. 5G is simply stronger. I noticed before on mobile masts, they've got this three pins around it, which has nothing to do with actually needed for mobiles. It's the little discs that do that. This is actually a mind control technology that was created by, what's the guy called now? I don't remember his name now, but some years ago there was a guy who was actually did more work for optical analysis, work with sound, and realized there was a method of actually creating subliminals that are 100% effective. They can be used to put the message in and people would do it. So anyway, that involves these three pins, which you see around all these mobile masks. It shows they're all putting up mind control technology. Lowry, that's the one, yeah. Lowry. He was taken off by the military, so he couldn't actually sell his work for good reasons for subliminals. It all got used for military purposes, and now it's attached to all these different masts. It all contains mind control. Oh, next 10 years, there's a bit of a projection. It's hard to say at the moment, because as I said, it's hard to see anything because we're creating it now. If you look at what the prophets have predicted, it's all up until now. It seems to end. A lot of people think it's the end of the world. No, it's only the end of what's predictable. It's up to us now. Now, I do see more crisis because people still need to wake up. If they don't wake up to this crisis, it'll be another one in a few years, it'll be completely different. There can still be natural crisis come. But again, even those affected by a consciousness. I've noticed that in the past, even when I was back on Hawaii many years ago doing this transformation work, the island which we were doing the healing, when there was a hurricane coming, it seems to change direction and miss the island. Hurricanes are very transformative themselves. They throw things up the roots and make a change. Quite often they go because there's transformation needed. If you're doing the transformation anyway, it's not needed. And I can have had visions of more of these coming in a few years. And I said, if you transform, it's not needed. So really, it's up to us. We can now transform because we want to. We don't need any crisis anymore. Otherwise, we don't have much crisis we need. Pyramids, there's many of them, actually. Long Island is an interesting point. You know, obviously, this is where they've got the Montauk Project, where MKUltra are based. So naturally, they've got things there that are being used. They're there for a reason, because there are these pyramids there which amplify power. They're there in the PowerPoint to actually misuse the power and actually direct it. I will point out, though, that the little radionics device I put out does overcome all of that. It's more powerful than what they've got. Yes, there is nano poisoning. Nano simply means very, really small. It's in many things these days. Obviously, in microchips these days, very, very tiny technology. They put massive circuits into something 4 millimeters wide. But also in the chemtrails, there's chemicals which are made to reassemble themselves as little chips in your body. Thing about detoxifying is the body knows how to do it. We do things which help the body in what it's already doing, not thinking we can do it from the outside. This is where homeopathy comes in very handy. It's a little boost of the body's vitality based on your symptomology that helps the body to correct itself. Body can change anything, and this is basically how the healing crisis works. Being overwhelmed, you break down, rearrange to a higher level, and suddenly you can handle that. So if you've got stuff you can't handle when you go through a healing crisis, then you can handle it. Homeopathy, just like that point on system, helps go through a healing crisis as you transform. One of the first remedies I'd give for a lot of these things is thuya. It's used for after vaccines, for instance. It's also, you know, compromises the system. But really, it depends on the individual. If you see a homeopath and they actually treat constitutionally, the remedy you have will also throw out these nanotechnology, because it'll move the body to be able to look after itself. Oh, books. I haven't been any more books lately. I've been more doing online publishing, like writing courses and stuff, but maybe one of these days. I haven't got any immediate plans to write books, because I've been more doing the online books. Yeah, and anarchy, interesting word again, how people see these different things. In fact, people use ancient names to actually label things that are there now, even though they don't know what they really are. Originally, they were seen as an angelic race. Now, different people respond to this in different ways. For instance, when Christianity came in, it put people of all old religions, everything of the old religions became evil. Because now there are different images out there. There's the angels, then something people see as evil. Something new happens, people attach an old label to it and say, okay, this is an anarchy and it's evil. You know, this is something new that even the witness have labeled it. The Anunnaki, interesting, because it's like the word Anu seems to be in all the Shining One names, like Danu and the Fairy Queens, Anubis, Anunnaki. All these Shining Ones came from down from Sirius seem to have this word of power. The Anu part of the word of power shows where it was coming from. It was a goddess energy. So originally this was not a bad race. But people use this label for many other things now. So they might call these things Anunnaki, and yes, they're terrible. But this is not the same as the old Anunnaki. Like, this same name has been used to describe so many different things. We can't go by names anymore. One always has to see beyond. Because otherwise, this is how people control you. Several things given the same name, then they relate them all and say that shoes, this is wrong as well. And it puts you off finding truth. We've got to look beyond names. Yes, there's crap out there. There's negative forces, there's positive forces. Use your instincts to feel what you want to avoid, and it's don't just go by names, because different people use those different names differently. Yes, for black and white, these are the colours of the underworld. Every time you enter the underworld, those three colours appear. Quite often in our methods of journeying, we kind of bring them into meditation, which triggers it. Notice these are the colours of a cyclicity. They can represent sunset and sunrise, day and night. Or in the plant, say, such as the elder, the way the flowers are first white, gives red to berries, which are the first red and then turn black. It's like the maiden, mother, and crone, the innocence and the bleeding of the when you come to age and find the blackness of the crone. resource cyclicity, which is part of how we enter the unconscious by understanding the cyclicity of things and time cycles and so on. When those three colors are there, it helps trigger your shift of consciousness. So usually when they're all there, it's time of transformation, time to enter the underworld. With the solstice, as always, is a pivotal point where things are changing. You see, anytime there's a change in a wave pattern up and down, the points of change are most important. In these cases, you've got winter, the solstice and equinoxes. It's when you've reached the peak and when you reach the middle, change of flow. So the top and bottom of a wave, obviously points of change, but actually halfway between, it changes from, say, a convex curve to concave curve is also a major change. These are all times when the veil is thinner because we're actually on that point of the wave where things are changing. Therefore, the energy of change is natural. Then with the solstice, natural, the light's starting to return. Sun's starting to come back and get stronger. Time of the darkness is weakening, the light's strengthening. That's what it's about. So you can use that any solstice, but this time particularly because of what's happening this year, is a hopeful time to end up all this crap and turn to something better. Doesn't mean we live by it. It's just simply a perfect time to align yourself to the cycles of nature to get more power in what you're doing. That'd be a good goal to work towards then, to actually get this change happening, to actually end this whole crap once and for all and step into a better world. So in our creation, it's good to focus on that. Work on a goal now. As you visualize our world, we'll work on breaking down all the corruption now, exposing all the lies, so I'll create a better system and try and implement it at the solstice. From then on, we're deciding as we step into a new year, we step into a better world. We kind of hold that thought and put the intention out. You can discreate anything you want. Obviously, the negative ones is what you want to discreate. When you recognize that everything is your creation, the negatives are held in place by your reaction to them, your negative emotions, your inner beliefs, and so on. Therefore, any negative situation in your life, this is what you're going to discreate. You go into those negative feelings, go into your despair, your frustration, your fear, your pain. And as you welcome all those feelings, you expand and expand and expand. You get to the point where you realize, this isn't me, it's my creation. You let go. And as all those feelings go, the whole situation goes. What's the time now? Okay, fine. Okay, number six, interesting because there's different systems here, but generally looking at the Kabbalah and astrology, it's the number of the sun. Because in the Kabbalah, it's the number of Devarith, the central Sephirah, to the sun. Point of transformation, a point of the sacrifice gods shifting to a higher plane. Goes perfectly what I was talking about, the solstice, the time of change, transformation to a higher level, the sun energy. Okay, any more questions? Okay. When you look at the hands, the first thing I'd say is do the STO point, back of the neck, because it's due to the nerve supply. So everything in the hands, remember, this is the last place you get nerve supply, nerves are quite aching, it's all blocked. Do the STO point first. Then, because it's, that obviously affects the nerves, you're talking about neuropathy here. Then, because it's arthritis, I say thyroid. There's a point of the hand itself, just like on the foot, there's a thyroid point, find where it hurts. If that's a painful spot, you know that's going to do it. It'll get your kind of calcification out. Now, when somebody's taking medication, this does block it. Always suggest people try and change that for a natural alternative. Generally, we reduce drugs gradually as we play with herbs and homeopathic remedies because drugs are suppressive. Very hard to fully heal with still on drugs. You won't get there. You can begin to change, but then you have to be willing to come off drugs. The best thing in between is to actually replace something else, herbs and homeopathic remedies. First thing I take when you're dealing with the thyroid and dealing with the nerves and so on, first of all, seaweeds, get the iodine. Google lipids, because they help thyroid as well. But things like nettle, very good for arthritis because they detoxify the system, get the uric acid out of them. So get them on herbs, and you can go on top of the homeopathy rather than take drugs. What have we got here? Well, actually, what you're talking about there is how psychic surgery works. But actually, it's happening, obviously, at the energetic level, first of all. You've seen you put your power number out and it pulls something out. You take the energy of, say, a tumor. The tumor will then dissolve because the energy is what's holding it in place. And sometimes, energy itself is a solid thing you find in the underworld, which can simply be removed. like an entity or something. And yeah, that can work. It's not really, when you work on an energetic level, it's not really like psychic surgery, pull out something physically, but when you move an energy, the body will follow. Working best to help the boundaries. It's very simple. Meditate with a caller in. Thing to realize here is how a cat is. They're very strong boundaries, and exactly what they're like. They can be very cuddly one moment. When they don't want you, they'll let you know. They'll turn to the claws if you do something they don't want. You know, it's like they can do exactly what they want. No problem. When you meditate with a cat, with best, you can have that cat energy in you. You learn to set your boundaries like a cat. Not less aggressively, it's just saying, here's the line, I'll do exactly what I want. Well, you've got a double meaning, this one, about the serpent energy, because even calling Leviathan bad is another opinion. He wasn't bad at all originally. He's a serpent of water, these elemental forces. And so Christianity turned everything bad at some point. This is part of magic. Leviathan is the dragon of water. You've got dragons of all elements, just like angels of elements. Serpent is the raw power. It can be seen as a kundalini, but obviously the kundalini is more fiery. When a fire rises, the serpent becomes the dragon. But the serpent is the raw power of creation, our instincts. Not evil itself, but of course it can become balanced. If you're just on the serpent level all the time, you're not using that consciousness, you become animal-like. But it's a sexual energy, the reproduction, but possibility of change, regeneration. Snakes shed their skins. This is a good symbol of regeneration too, change. It's actually within the instincts, this natural ability to evolve. Quite often we are not evolving because we're not in touch with animal instincts. We can try and do things too mentally, and it's like, no, we're stuck, mind can't do it all. It's denying half of our reality. So the serpent is what it is. No point seeing it's not positive or negative, it's part of us. It has to be balanced. We need to awaken it because we want our power. But we don't rely on that entirely. We want to raise to a higher consciousness too. That's why we raise the kundalini. So this kind of dualism creeping to everything, the superstition and the kind of general kind of effect of the church to suppress everything is adding negative meanings to all these things. They're not necessarily negative or positive in themselves. There has to be balance though. To heal trauma. Well, there's many layers of trauma. That's a thing. When I point out on the ultimate healing course, you know, the different points of different glands and different levels of emotion. Well, it depends on what emotion you're storing in that trauma. With emotional trauma, obviously, you know, it'd probably be grief stored there. You might work more on the solar plexus and pancreas. If your fear is the main thing, you work on the thymus. Well, sometimes you look at the eye, you see several organs linked to the same trauma because it involves several different emotions. So really, you've got to look at the whole. You start by looking at the iris, and if you don't know how to do that, you simply go to where the points are most painful. You push the painful points, there's something stored there, they'll come out. That's simple. Okay, when it comes to the Japanese magic course, there are other things. You know, obviously it's towards the end of the course. You've done several layers. It's not exactly the same as Shinjali, but it will still prepare your energy. There's a build-up to it, that's the thing. See, when you come into prerequisites, it's very hard to be precise, to actually know when somebody's ready. Because, you know, they might not have done one thing, but their evolution through other methods might have made them ready. So we have to put some kind of prerequisite. But on the Javanese magic course, although it doesn't include Chandali, there's plenty of building up of power. Okay, somebody asked about what is karma. I've written many blogs on this one. I suggest you go and read them because it's a big subject. Basic karma, it can mean action, it can mean learning, it can mean momentum. Basically means you set something in motion, now you're dealing with it. First thing I tell everybody is to let go of the childish idea that it's due to somebody punishing you for being bad and rewarding for being good. It doesn't work like that. It's not really how the universe works. That's a childish idea. You have to actually learn to take responsibility for your creation and recognize the complications of that, so that everything you're doing is producing an impact. And so when you're really looking at it, there's a lot to learn, and that's a lot of my work has been about, in actually overcoming your past problems. It's looking at how you've generated these blockages and learn to discreate them. That's overcoming karma. The rising the kundalini helps that because it releases these blockages. Karma is simply things you've set in motion that are now stuck there. It can mean anything you've created really that's now there and has momentum. Okay, blue dragon, interesting. So I was mentioning this new energy coming in. Some people seeing it as an eagle, some as a phoenix. Actually, the color most commonly seen is blue. Blue Dragon, Blue Phoenix, Blue Eagle. This is all this new energy of transformation coming in. It's very modern boost coming in at this time when we are at the verge of a major change and we need to transform. It's a higher energy we haven't had before. It helps you do things you couldn't do before. So just let it in, whatever form it comes, work with it, let it in. If it's there, you find yourself doing things you couldn't do before. No, don't think this creating is to be done for you by the cabal. You do your own disc creating and creating. It's got the both going hand in hand. See, every time you want to create something, it triggers all your old patterns to reassert themselves. All the stuff lying in the background that's still holding you back. So every time you create something, chances are you're going to have to disc create something too. Now, disc creating isn't about just letting somebody else do it. It's about looking in your life, what you don't want there anymore that's holding you back. Painful situations you'd rather change. So you do your own disc creating. It's not up to some, neither your creation or your disc creation, up to somebody else. And always you're doing both. It's not one or the other. Just find any time you want to create something, you do visualize something, what happens? Negatives arise, doubts come up. These are old creations reasserting themselves. Therefore, to be free to create a new, you're going to have to disc create the old. The two go hand in hand all the time. Okay, astral projection. Well, actually, I'll simply give you a very quick answer to that one. I can tell what worked for me in the past, because one of the first books I read many, many years ago, back in the college days, was a book called Art and Practice of Astral Projection by a guy called Ophiel. He used to write in those days. He's not so much around anymore. But, you know, his books are simple and practical. He laid out this symbol, four different techniques of astral projection to try out. And I worked through them. They all worked. Sometimes it took a few months, but, you know, it's a progressive method that got there. Okay, we're running out of time now, please. So we're going to talk. We'll be talking again tomorrow. Okay, let's have the book of the author. I'll write the author's name down. Hang on, let's put it to everybody. Yeah, that wasn't his real name, his pen name, of course. But, you know, he wrote six books in that series, Art and Practice series. They were all, you know, three simple practical ones, down to earth, but they worked. And the astral projection book there is one of the shorter books I've found, but actually worked. I've seen much bigger books who take you down all kinds of weird stuff and not practical enough. And many methods out there is just not really the easiest way. I'll give you some simple examples of how it worked, for instance. I mentioned... I've seen many recently people writing about this method of actually trying to climb a rope out of your body. But actually, climbing a rope is not something everybody knows what feels like. I found much easier if you fall out of the body, because everybody knows what it feels like to fall. It happens so many times you're about to fall asleep and so, you wake up because of this little jolt, it feels like you're falling. Because actually, it is natural to fall out of the body. Try that instead. When you go to bed and falling asleep, imagine you fall out of the body through your bed into the downstairs room, wherever. That's one easier way. Works much better than trying to climb out of the body. Anyway, I've got to get on now. I'll be talking again tomorrow at this time for those who are coming to that meeting on co-creation. And this is recorded for those who want to do it later. Okay. See you all soon.